Welcome to the Born and Raised Audio Experience, presented by Onyx.
Hey, what's up, my woods people? I'm Tyler Jones, and this is the Backcountry Miniseries from the Element Podcast. Casey, fill them in.
Since we are diving headfirst into the backcountry hunting this season, we decided to call in some help and talk to some experts that know how to crush it in the backcountry.
So make sure and subscribe, and if this is helpful, we'd love for you guys to give us a five-star rating and an iTunes review.
Absolutely. Now let's get into it, because I still have a lot of Mountain House flavors to try before September gets here. Hopefully that was a really soft insult to tell you you're not as fit as Cam Haynes. I'm kidding. Man. All right, so on the show today, we got Trent Fisher with Born and Raised Outdoors. Trent, how are you this morning, man?
I'm awesome. It's a great morning here. A little bit of rain, but it's not too bad.
Yeah, that's good. I guess rain's kind of more the norm for y'all up where you're at. Where are you at exactly?
So I live in Myrtle Point, Oregon, which is right on the coast. It's about 16 or 20 miles away from Coos Bay, which is a bigger, kind of one of the bigger towns around. But yeah, my town is about 1,400 people. We got one stoplight, so we're pretty hardcore.
From the same town, just in Texas. We have one stoplight. So.
About 1,400 people.
Yeah.
And no kidding.
Yeah. Zero fast food restaurants, as far as I know, right?
Yeah.
None.
Yeah. So, we have an A&W.
Oh, so yeah. We have a Sonic, which is pretty much the same thing. Wow. Look at all these parallels.
Cut from the same cloth.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. That's cool, man. So, Trent, you're, you know, a big part of Born and Raised Outdoors. Y'all have been doing this thing for how many years now?
We started Born and Raised Outdoors in 2007, so about 12 years or so.
Yeah. Awesome, man. And just been rocking and rolling ever since. And I guess y'all kind of cut your teeth hunting elk there in Oregon in the Pacific Northwest?
Yeah. So we started out kind of wanting to create something different than had been done before as far as in the Roosevelt Woods. There's been a lot of Rocky Mountain elk videos and stuff, and so we wanted to show our portray a Roosevelt video, and that's kind of what inspired us to start this whole thing. And then it just snowballed from there into going trying to go as many places as we could every single year as we could financially afford, and without getting a divorce.
I hear that, man. It's like a constant walking the edge of the knife pretty much on that deal. That's exactly what Tyler and I try to do. Just that yearning for adventure is always there, but you got to be a good family man too. And that's something that I see in you in particular. Like, I really appreciate your willingness to show and share your faith, you know, through your videos. Like, it's encouraging to see dudes pray and pray wholeheartedly at the beginning of stuff. So, kudos on that, man. Yeah, no problem at all. I feel inspired every time I see it. And I have a question, really. Like, do you wake up every morning and play y'all's intro just to get going in the morning? Because it works for me.
If I hear that intro one more time, I might just go insane.
Isn't it funny how that works, man?
Yeah. It's definitely music is a big part of our how we started and kind of how we've done our videos and stuff like that. It's amazing what a song can do, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tyler, I feel like you know a little bit about that.
yeah, I play music a little bit. I don't know if any of you guys do, but
sure. I couldn't play the radio, so I have to listen. I got to listen.
There you go.
Can play the elk flute though, so that matters, right?
I do a little. I don't say good or well, but I can blow on it. That's for sure.
You hang with the right guys, it don't matter, right?
That's right. You get the right guy behind you, it doesn't really matter.
That's cool. So, you know, we really wanted to get you on to talk some backcountry knowledge. I feel like that y'all do that quite a bit. It's something we're really new to. We're going to have a backcountry hunt this year, so we're going to kind of just talk to you about a little bit of your knowledge on, like, stuff to use, things you're going to need, maybe stuff we didn't think about. But first, can you kind of tell us a little bit about, I don't know, maybe your first backcountry trip and how you got into kind of that backcountry style hunting?
Yeah, so I grew up here on the coast of Oregon, and it's relatively roaded, I would say. There's a lot of logging biggest, our biggest manufacturer around here is the logging and the timber industry. And so there's quite a bit of roads. And so to call where I live kind of back country, as far as, you could always hit a road or come out somewhere. There's not a lot of wilderness land around exactly where I live. And so when we started out hunting, it was, we day hunt. I'm probably similar to what you guys have done, and just go out and hunt for the day and make a big loop or whatever. But you'd always end up back at the rig at night, and then you'd camp by the rig or whatever, and there was never any really stay overnight spots where we hunt around here. And it wasn't until we started actually going out of state that we really started prepping for that kind of a thing. And I'll never forget our first time in Wyoming. We do a lot on our mountain bikes back then, a lot more than now, because the roads, access has been kind of shut down a lot. But we would bike back into a spot and then hike and hunt from there. And that really, really just opened our eyes to the possibilities that were just so endless as far as just areas with no people, and it was really amazing, especially in Wyoming, going to a new state that we'd never even stepped foot in Wyoming, let alone hunted it. Mm-hmm. And it was just, with our style of hunting, with our run and gun style of hunting that we do here, it was just, it opened up so many doors for us. And once you get that, and you guys will feel it this year, once you get that kind of craving or you taste that one time, you're like, oh man, you have to go back. The backcountry is just, there's something to it. There's something to packing everything that you need or that you think you need on your back and going, as far as you want. Then it's, and I think the phrase "it's all mental" gets used a ton, but it is pretty much all mental. Anybody can do it. You do not have to be the elitist of the elite. Does it help? Heck yeah, it helps. But you don't have to be a super athlete to do it. You can go as far as you want. But the thing that always needs to be in your mind is meat care and the important things, obviously, but safety. But so we started out just going on, that Wyoming trip and hiking in. We'd go in for, we usually back then we did like 8 days at a time, which we've changed our whole motto. Now we go in for 4 days. We pack for 4 days almost on every trip. Mm-hmm. And it's 3 to 4 days. So if we have not found the elk or killed an elk in 4 days, we're going to be moving anyway. Mm-hmm. So that's what we kind of, the mentality we go on is we'll go and we'll pack in. And if we're not seeing the sign that we think that we should see, if there's not enough life around, we're going to be bombing and we're going to be out of there as quick as we can. We always use nighttime for travel, which isn't that much fun.
No.
But you're only allotted so many days, you've got to really maximize your time out in the woods. And so what we do is if we don't see what we want in this spot, then we'll just bomb out and then we'll travel most of the night, however far, to our second spot. That kind of brings me to another point. Always have more than one spot. So in one state, like, we'll pick three spots. And a lot of times we only end up going to one, and then possibly two. We've only had to go to three different spots one time in over the years. It was in Colorado one year that we just could not find elk. And then we finally found them in the last spot. But it was always be mobile. Do not just like marry into any plan. Don't we're going here. This is where the elk are. And you get there and there's one rub and two tracks within, and you're usually on an average day, you go anywhere from 8 to 13 miles a day. So Ooh. Hiking. Yeah. But I'm talking, and that's all day long though.
Yeah.
You're not running. You're not doing, you're just slowly staying with it. You're just kind of just keep on. And that's, I think that's a big thing. It's just keep going, keep moving, elk are the biggest thing is elk are where you find them, right?
Yeah.
So you just got to find them.
Yeah. So. Yeah, sure. So when you're talking about moving those spots, like in my experience, okay, I'm pretty guilty of this, but we are tied to one unit all the time because it's pretty much where my family has hunted for forever. And we have so much local knowledge there, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
For me, moving spots is going three drainages over. Is that what you're talking about? Or are you talking about like driving 2 or 3 hours, going to a different part of the state kind of thing?
We've done both. We have done both. But usually, like, what we've found is if they're not hanging at a certain elevation or if they're not hanging at certain spots, like in Colorado, I mean, we drive a lot of times, we'll drive almost 12 hours sometimes and go to a whole new different location, a whole new different drainage, a whole new different watershed, you know. And it could be, you know, they are just on certain spots, or but from what we've found, either they're there or they're not, you know.
Yeah.
And you can go around the hillside, but, you know, we like to and it kind of spurs the whole thing of we like the adventure. So there's always that. We try not to hunt the same spot 2 years in a row. We try not to. Sometimes we have in the past, but it just seems like if you have this inhibitions of it. And that's what I would say, like what broke us out of the homeland here. Cause I mean, honestly, man, it was like, you know, you know way better than I do, probably, you know, the elk are going to be, well, or deer in your guys' probably backyard, but you know, you always go by this tree and you bugle from this tree, and if he doesn't answer down here, you know, you've seen that tree 1,000 times, you've done, you know, this loop, you've hunted this drainage 100,000 times, and usually they hang in the back end of this, and you know, and it's just like you go somewhere new and you don't have any expectations, you have no idea, they could be here, they could be there, and it honestly at the end of the day it helps you hunt twice as hard just out of purely just because of the unknown, you know. So, and that's that we've found is just, you know, that we've gone back to places before and maybe it's not as good. Your expectations are like, man, they were all over in here last year and now we can't even find an elk, you know, and it just morale on the team just kind of goes, oh man, this sucks, you know, whereas if you're in a new spot, everybody's like, well, maybe they're over there. Let's go that way. You know, and maybe they're over here. And so it seems like it keeps team morale way, way higher when you're just in a new area and everybody's in that search mode, you know, in that exploration mode. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely makes sense. So at what point, you know, like there's got to be, surely there's instances where you're seeing a lot of sign, but you're not really seeing a lot of elk. And even the sign may look kind of fresh, but, you know, like at what point do you decipher that sign as being like, oh, well, that's a week old maybe or so, and the elk have moved, and so we're going to move. You know, I mean, is there any instances that you guys have had that where you're like, man, the sign is all over, but it seems like it may just be a few days behind?
Yeah. So the one thing I will say is like where we're hunting, usually we're anywhere from like 6,000 to 10,000 feet or 10.5 or something. Ooh. Pretty high. So where, that's just where we hunt. You can find them lower. You can find them even higher than that. But what I will say about, that's one of the big things that I learned is with sign. At that elevation, the air is so dry. Sign, it dries up so much faster. So I live right on the coast. I mean, it's rainforest where I live here in Oregon. But where we're hunting in those elevations, if you find sign that is actually looks to be kind of fresh, it's usually very, very fresh. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but to answer your question though, it's, if you're around fresh sign, those elk, they're usually just, unless they get bumped and pushed a lot, they're just making a circuit. They're coming out to feed at night. They're going to a bedding area during the middle of the day. They're coming back out to feed at night. I mean, they've got a cycle that they do, which, if you're on sign and stuff, you're around them. You're definitely, you know, close to them or somewhere. They're going to be around. They're not going to be too awful far.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's cool, man. So you were talking about elevations a little bit there. What is, as far as like a practical guy trying to head out west and do some stuff, what can a guy handle who's like, you know, say moderate shape, works for a living or whatever? You know, how high can you really figure on a guy hunting? I know it's kind of subjective, but like in like as far as what you think, what elevations can a guy kind of handle and hunt at before he really has to start thinking about, you know, like that difference in elevation change and stuff?
Yeah. So I live on sea level. I live at 25 feet.
I used to sleep at 3. I understand what you're talking about. It's tough, man.
Yeah. I mean, I have tide water right now about 30 yards away from me. Right now where I sit. So, I mean, we are at the bottom of the barrel, but, we've seen a little bit. I know a quick story was with my brother Trevor, and we were in Wyoming. It was Wyoming, and man, we got up there about 10:06 or so, somewhere in there. And anyway, he was exhausted. He had a headache. He didn't feel good at all. He just had to sit down. He could only go for so far, and then he'd have to sit down. And it was crazy. I'd never really seen that before, and I've seen it with Steve Howard one time. He got really kind of sick a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
And but those were the only two times I've ever seen it. But at the fear for me was, like, I asked Trevor at that one point, you know, I said, put your GPS and put Onyx, put everything away. I said, and where would you go right now if you had to go back to camp? And he pointed in the worst case scenario direction, different drainage. I mean, if he had to, you know, go, and he was dead set on that was exactly where camp was. And it was like, whoa, it was kind of scary. Yeah. Actually. So it definitely can mess with you and affect you 100%. But like I said earlier, man, it's just the speed that you want to do it. Everybody's different. And just slow down, just slow way down, because you're going to be moving all day anyway. Or that's the style of hunting we do. Uh-huh. We hunt, we kill most of our bulls between 11 and 2 o'clock, right in the middle of the day.
Cool.
And the reason for that is just because that's where the elk, you know, we'll follow them or chase bugles or whatever. And then they're going to bed down. They mm-hmm. have a place that they want to go. And so we'll wait for them. We'll just kind of shadow them and keep in touch with them until they do bed down. And then you can usually get in there and call that bull out of the herd in the middle of the day. That way you're not dealing with all the elk. You're just dealing with one elk.
Yeah.
And his nose and his eyesight and everything. Yeah. And so that's our kind of our strategy that we're using during the rut.
Sure. So. Yeah, it makes sense, man. So, you know, speaking of the story you just told, what kind of stuff do you have in your first aid kit usually when you're out in the day?
I am ill prepared in that category. I'll tell you, I cut my finger real bad. I had a couple. It was a year before last on a hunt in where was I? Idaho. I was in Idaho and cut my finger. Almost cut my whole tip of my finger. Almost cut my whole end of my finger off.
Ugh.
And Trevor had an old stitch kit, and we looked at the date on it. And it was the stitch kit was made in 1980.
Oh, right. Year,
yeah.
It my was goodness.
36 years old. and so he opens it up, and all the stitching and everything and all the thread just fell apart.
Disappears.
It was nothing. And so, yeah. So it was like, we were not prepared. So we duct tape the heck out of it, and anyway, my end of my finger ended up rotting off, honestly. So I was ill prepared. Yeah, it was not a good deal. So yeah, so but yeah, I carry after that. It was pretty cool because some of the people that watch our shows and stuff, I got sent like three different stitch kits and all sorts of stuff from nurses and everything. So it was it worked out great. But no, I now do have a stitch kit just for the real, you know, the real bad stuff. I have just some various bloodborne stuff, you know, something that'll soak up blood and everything. But honestly, that's all I really carry. A lot of guys carry Band-Aids and stuff. And I know Trevor, he carries ibuprofen all the time, and he carries Tylenol PM for sleeping at nights because sometimes he has trouble sleeping and everything. And I've never had an issue with any of that kind of stuff, so I don't yeah. carry it.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I mean, there's different. Everybody does it a little bit differently, but honestly, just me personally, I don't. I'm probably too optimistic on that.
Well, sure. You know, there's that's a little sure. wisdom there as far as, like, I mean, I'm sure you know how to use a Band-Aid, but like as far as like advanced things go, there's no reason to carry something in the field that you don't really know what you're doing with. Right. So I'm not going to carry. Right. I've never tied up a suture. I don't know how to do that stuff. So I'm probably not going to carry that. Now, a butterfly Band-Aid, I can work that sucker. You know,
there you go.
Yeah. Or super glue or whatever it is, you know? So, you know, it just kind of makes sense. Just carry what you know how to use and do. And, yeah, I'm kind of like with you with the sleeping thing. Like, I kind of can just pretty much sleep anywhere. I might have to like wake up in the morning and do some funky yoga moves that I make up, you know, to kind of get good and loosened up.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I can kind of sleep, but, it's kind of taken a little bit of kind of working on to get the right system together for that. And I'm sure you've kind of worked through it a little bit. What's your sleeping system look like?
So, yeah, so I've changed it around a little bit. Last year I messed around with a quilt And yeah, I'm a bigger, I'm upper body. My shoulders are a little bit wider and everything. And it just did not work for me.
Yeah.
It really didn't. And I fought it and fought it. I don't know why I froze, because, you know, as far as I should have just, you know, done away with it, but I don't know what I was thinking. It was going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I just bought a new bag, and, it's called a, Stone Glacier, Chilkoot, I think is what it's called. Anyway, and it seems warm as toast. It seems like it's a great bag so far. I've been really happy, and that's a big thing, guys. That is a huge thing when you're out there. So you want to eliminate everything that's going to make you want to leave. And
yeah,
that's what I tell everybody.
That's a good point.
You need to get that out right now. So your boots are a giant thing. If your feet cannot handle, you know, if your feet are tore up or everything, it's going to make you want to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And your sleeping bag, if you're cold at night and you cannot get a good sleep and you're drowsy all day or whatnot, you can't replenish those muscles that you're using that day, that's going to make you want to leave. I mean, you got to get all these, and they're not a huge amount of things, but there's a lot to be said about comfort, you know, and being warm and feeling good, and you will stay out there twice as long. You'll hunt twice as hard, and it'll make you the trip, you know, as twice as enjoying. So those are the things that I tell people, is make sure you just get those things. I mean, you can deal with, you know, no camo at all, you know, honestly, you can deal with a lot of different things, but as soon as you start getting just a little uncomfortable and it starts to wear down on you and break down your feet or whatever, man, it can really, really start to escalate from there. And then pretty soon you're like, well, let's just go back to the truck.
Yeah. Yeah. So are you a boots or like a trail runners kind of guy?
I'm a boots guy.
Yeah.
I'm a boots, and I've switched a little bit this last year. I used to go with a really tall boot, and anyway, I went with just like a mid boot this year. But yeah, I'm definitely a boots kind of guy. Definitely, I don't do gaiters. A lot of the other guys in our crew do. You know, they love gaiters and everything, and it's just one more thing to me. So it's like, I'm not big into them. So, but yeah, definitely a boots kind of guy for me.
Yeah, trekking poles ever go along with you?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And this is one I kind of ate crow on years ago. My idiot brother, you know, he had these poles in his pack, and boy, I made fun of him. And we killed a bull. It was in Colorado, I believe. And it was like an 8 miler or something like that. And boy, I really gave him the dog, you know, and pretty soon I had sticks in my hand and I had everything trying to, you know, get out of there and so, yeah, I had to apologize, you know, the next year. And so, yeah, every single one of us carries trekking poles always. Yeah.
So like what situations are you using those in, and when are they riding on your pack?
Yeah. So what we do is there is a hunter every single day. We'll usually hunt in groups of at least three, and usually around five people deep is what we're doing. And so whoever's like got their bow in their hand, obviously they're not going to have trekking poles. But when you're hiking in and doing all that, when you're just like in momentum, just to get to where you're going, to where you think the elk are or something, we'll use them. But when we're hunting, we don't use them at all.
Gotcha.
And then pack outs is the 99% of the time. That's what we're saving the trekking poles for, is pack outs.
Yeah. So I see y'all do river crossings a decent amount. And are you like, I don't quite understand, like when I understand taking your pants off, it makes sense, right? But like, are you doing that in your boots? You taking and just rolling like barefoot, or how do you do those river crossings?
Sometimes both.
Yeah.
I did a bear hunt here just last week, and it was I did a 3-day backpack hunt I just thought, cause it was pretty sunny, and I knew once I got to where I was headed, but I was headed like 13,000 or 1300 feet elevation climb. It was a big hike. I should have taken my boots off. So one thing that we always do is carry a set of Crocs.
Yeah.
We have on our packs. They're super lightweight. It is so nice to get out of those boots at night.
Mm-hmm.
And just to air your feet out, just to, you know, take foot care is like paramount to us.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, on a hunt, I honestly, the only thing that I do not skimp on, one of them is socks. I bring on a hunt, I mean, shoot, like on Land of the Free last year, in my tote, I had over 30 pairs of socks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I do not mess around with my feet. Yeah. I don't want jungle foot. I'm just like, that's one of my big things. And so, so we carry Crocs with us. And so those work great for river crossings too. So just, I mean, it adds an extra, you know, getting your boots off and doing the whole deal and then wading across. But it depends on the crossing as well. If we can't find a spot, usually we'll just put on our Crocs, go across, you know, dry your feet off. And then, I mean, doing it right can save a lot in the long run.
So. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we've talked about the hunt that we're going on to the wilderness unit down there in New Mexico. And, surprisingly enough, I think after some research, there's going to be quite a few river crossings, at least to get into like the hunting area, right? So,
Cool.
Yeah, you know, which is surprising because it's kind of the desert, right? But there's water in this unit, and like people say, you got to cross a lot. And I've been trying to kind of figure out, you know, what's that going to look like, just because I don't know, wet feet are terrible, right? So and I don't know if you got to cross a river 12 times to finally get to the trail where you used to actually start making an ascent. I don't know. You might just spend the whole time in your Crocs until you actually start hitting up. I don't really know how that's going to work, you know, just hiking the trail in Crocs, but,
absolutely.
Yeah, no, that's cool though, man. And you know, you're talking about your bear hunt. There was a backpack trip and y'all do a ton of the backpacking stuff. And, it's going to be something completely new for me. I've done one backpacking trip ever. It was to the bottom of the Black Canyon in Colorado. Tyler and I went up there and carried about 70 or 80 pounds on our back of camera gear. Well, you know how it is. You start carrying camera gear, man. Yeah. It adds up a lot. And I also carried a giant jug of peanut butter that I don't think I opened the whole time we were down there. So I like my food, man. But it was the learning curve has started to curve, if you know what I'm saying.
I do.
But what do you look for, like, in a good pack like that you're going to be, you know, day packing with or whatever while you're in there, but also you're going to have to like load up camp sometimes or load up meat and just, you know, throw it on your back and go.
Yeah. So honestly, I mean, and I'm not here to plug anything as far as what we use and all that stuff, but we use Exo mountain packs.
Yeah.
We love them. They've been great for us. And they're versatile. So it's got a frame on it, a solid sturdy frame on it, so where you can take your bag actually off. So we'll have our camp in our pack, and then that pack part detaches from the frame, and you can put the meat directly. So that's a big thing is comfortability. What I would tell anybody before you get started on a big journey like you guys are talking about doing is get fitted for your pack. Make sure your pack fits right. There's so many people out here, and it's the same as bows. You know, it's the same. A lot of people just pick up a bow and start shooting it. Well, it may not be their draw length. It may not be, you know, whatever. I mean, so many different factors in that. And so, just like in bow hunting, go to a pro shop and get someone that knows the knowledge of bows to fit you right. That's the same way it is in a pack. Make sure your pack fits right. You want to try to keep that weight is when you're getting heavy loads. You want to keep it up high on your shoulders, you know, for balance and for stability, so it's not dragging you backwards. And really kind of do the work with that. And I'm sure you guys hiking with weight on right now.
Haven't started to yet, actually. Planning on doing it some this summer. Honestly, like,
we don't have packs.
No, yeah, we don't have any packs. You know, we got day packs.
I love it.
It's part of one of our purchases is going to be, right? But my thing normally has always been just run a bunch, and then the weight thing kind of just happens. But I will take your advice on that. So what do you think? Like, what's that kind of fitness regime look like as far as preparing your body for heavy weight like that?
And I don't do it too often, I'll be totally honest. I did just a little bit for the last couple months. But I'll be totally honest. I probably did it, I don't know, a half a dozen times, you know, just hiking uphill with weight and just to kind of just get my legs just a little bit more, you know, a little more ready for the hunt. But it's not, like I said at first, it's in your head. If you think you can do it, and if all of us probably have families and stuff like that. I mean, it's the realistic side of things is it may or may not happen, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things where that's totally fine. And you just mentally just kind of go through it, but biggest thing is you don't want to wear yourself out too fast to where you're not worth anything, you know, the next day, or that, you know, just kind of pace yourself and go into the hunt like that. And I guarantee you guys, you know, you guys would be just fine.
Yeah. So what about the pack works so well for you guys? Like, what's chiefly important to a pack in your opinion?
In my opinion, everybody has their different opinions on packs, and mine is simplicity. I want something super simple. So, like, my pack has a hood on it, just a cover that goes over the top that only has one pocket in it. I have one pocket to put my stuff, my communication stuff, and some, you know, extra camera batteries and stuff like that, and my tags from license and all that stuff goes into that. And then everything else, it's just I pack my pack a little, I said, different than a lot of people. I have a dry bag in my pack. That's the XO comes with a dry bag that's inside of it, and I just stuff my sleeping bag stuff. I don't use any like say for my tent, you know, how you put your tent into a bag and everything. Nothing. No, I stuff everything. I just stuff it all into my pack so that it conforms the way that it wants to conform. So I don't have all these odd shapes all over. And so my weight ratio at that point with doing that and just stuffing everything down in there, my sleeping pad, my tent, my sleeping bag, all that stuff goes right into the bottom of my dry bag and in my pack. And so it finds its own way. And so it's well balanced that way as well. Mm-hmm. So you see what I'm saying? So I'm not like, oh, let's put the tent over on this side. Well, how much does that weigh? I don't want to be lopsided. Let's try and see sleeping bag. Let's put it into a stuff sack and let's put it over on this side. No, I just stuff it all into my pack. And so it ends up being just, you know, like a marshmallow, honestly. But at the same time, it's a well-balanced marshmallow.
Yeah, yeah. That's the kind
so
I like
we
to
all
eat.
Want, right?
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
So, but what about like all the little like odds and ends type stuff? You know, like fire starters and whatever else you might have, knives. Like, does that all go in that top pouch, or are you
for
stuffing
me, yes.
some of that? Okay.
No, for me, yes, it all goes into that top pouch. Fire starters, knives, knife sharpeners. That's another big one you're gonna need. Yeah, just the little knick-knack stuff, I would say, you know, cords for charging my phone, and, you know, little cords for recharging batteries and stuff like that. That all goes right in there. So when I take off my pack, I unzip one zipper and I've got access to all that. I don't have to get into my pack, but I don't like a ton of pockets to where it's like pockets all over. And that's what I like about the XOs is they're really simple. But you just gotta pack the way you want, and you can get more pockets, you know, here and there, and they make these little Velcro things, but it's just in my instances, just the less is better for me.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny you say pockets, cause we've been making fun of Tyler for being a pockety kind of guy. He likes pockets a lot.
I love it.
But, I'm kind of the opposite. I'm with you. Like for me, the more pockets I have, the more disorganized I'm going to be. It's kind of counterintuitive, but like I'm going to stick something in a pocket it's not normally in, and I'm never going to find it. And then we're going to get back and I'm going to be like, oh, there's my diaphragm that I lost 6 months ago right there in that pocket, you know? So, I kind of like that idea of just having one big thing. And when you get to where you're going that evening, you just spill out everything you got and it's everything you need, right? And you're not like hunting around different places or whatever. It kind of makes sense. When you're, you know, talking about like organizing stuff in your pack and having this there and here and there and everywhere, you know, food's a big deal, right? And especially for me, you know, like you were talking about like, eliminate the things that make you want to go home. Like I want to eat good while I'm in the backcountry. I'm not a like, oh, let's just make a cold protein shake for supper. You know, I'm wanting something hot, something tasty. But like, if you're talking about a 9-day trip, dude, that's a lot of stuff. Is that part of the thing that has led y'all to do like the 4-day loops? And then how much like weight and space are you saving by doing just the 4-day versus the 9-day?
Okay. Yeah. So anything that you're going to do in 4 days, the only difference that you're going to do in 9 days is food.
Yeah.
That's it. Mm-hmm. That's it. So you got to think about that right off the bat. Everybody says, oh man, that's so much more weight. When you're looking at it in the grand scheme of things, you got to have your tent. You've got to have your bag. You've got to have all this stuff, whether you stay one night or you stay a dozen nights, it's just food. Mm-hmm. So, and we use like Mountain House freeze dried food. There's a lot of manufacturers out there now that make freeze dried, you know, food. And that's what I use. I always, you can now, I mean, I did a hunt last year in Wyoming with the Go Hunt guys, the guys from Go Hunt and Brady Miller. His whole thing is food is for fuel. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Food is for fuel. It should not, it is not for fun. Is what he said, and I looked at him. I said, "You are an idiot. You are totally right." I said, "I am not out here to just, you know." And he did not bring a stove.
Oh,
you know, we use little jet boil stoves. You know,
yeah.
No, he ate these bars, these just nasty bars, and that's all he had. Well, you should have seen him. I had a Top Ramen, and I kind of waved it in front of his face, and he's like, "Oh my goodness!" And he just about. On day four, he just about melted over that Top Ramen.
Oh, man.
So, anyway, yeah, no, I'm with you, man. And when I'm out there, I want to have fun. I want to be comfortable. And I'm not out there to just prove that I'm the biggest, baddest guy on the mountain at all. So, I have my definite leisurely, you know, pick what meals you like. And like that Top Ramen thing, I like having, you know, a Top Ramen for lunch or something like that, something hot. And it just adds to, you know, the warmth of the hunt and everything, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just make sure, yeah, you go with these things. And one thing I will touch on, I guess, with packing wise, and I don't know if you guys have done any like overnight or a couple day things. But what our whole mantra is, if you don't use it in three times that you've been out, chuck it. You don't need it. So what that means is, say, you know, minus like a Stitch kit or something like that.
Bear spray. That, probably keep that, even though you don't use it, right?
Mayor may want that.
Yeah.
May not want that. But, you know, like, you know, something to do with, if you don't use a sleeping bag liner because in the last three trips you've been plenty warm, you don't need it. You know, you're not going to use it again. So, I mean, things like that, that you can cut weight on and, you know, so you can go as far as you want with the whole weight cut. Cody, he does amazing. I mean, he can pack for about 5 days, something like that, with food, with everything, and he can be somewhere around 28 pounds, 26
Whoa.
Pounds.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, is that, I mean, with camera gear and everything too?
No, that's minus camera gear.
Okay.
And minus a bow as well.
Okay.
But
gotcha.
But that's just pack weight.
That's still a lot. Yeah.
Oh yeah, like when we're going for 3 days, a lot of times our pack's around 23 pounds.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I mean, I was telling you about that Black Canyon trip. I mean, I think we literally were at that 70-pound range, and that was a two night kind of thing, like, you know, like one full day. You know, just so ignorant, but just means you got, you know, it's good to learn this stuff, and I'm glad we're talking.
Yeah,
to you
no.
About it.
And that's the whole thing, guys. I mean, you're going to be as comfortable as you want, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, it didn't matter at the time, did it?
No.
It was fun. You guys had a blast, I'll bet.
Oh, yeah.
It's even fun to look back and laugh about the cramps. You know what I mean? Honestly. In the time, I was dying, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, like, it's all just part of the experience, man. And that's what we're looking for, is experiences.
Yes. Heck yeah. No,
so,
that is awesome.
Yeah. So in the Mountain House line, what's your go-to, man?
My go-to's, it's been beef stroganoff, honestly.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah,
I love that for a meal, for dinner. I got some cool things with them. Actually, we get to go to the factory here in just another month or so and go meet all the guys and then look at the factory and check it out. So I'm super excited about that. But
that's cool.
Working with those guys in the future, it sounds like. But
tell them to send us some biscuits and gravy.
Dude,
that's our favorite.
I bet I can figure something out.
Dude, biscuits and gravy is the best, man.
B&G, okay.
Oh, yeah. And it's, you know, it's a breakfast one, so I don't know if it's got – I don't really pay much attention to the nutrients side of things, you know, but it's good.
Yeah, it is.
So,
taste over nutrients.
That's right, man. That and a little packet of Valentina hot sauce, like, you are set, man. It's good stuff. Yeah.
That's one thing I do carry is little – Tapatio.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
It goes a long way.
I love Tapatio. So, speaking of, like, the extra little food things, what are you taking as snacks and stuff like that?
So, I'll do day snacks. So, what I'll do is, before I go on a hunt, I'll have a tote. And my tote has all of my snack food in it. And so, I'll have a food tote, and I'll have because all of us pack in totes. We have our names on them, so it's so much easier. And they're like those big Costco stackable totes. They're black and yellow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's what we use. And so all of us have our own. So you just go through, up, there's Trent's food, there's Trent's sleeping, whatever. And you just rip them out of the trailer, and that's what you got for when you're, you know, when you're not packing into somewhere. So what I'll do is I'll some jerky, and I'll go to Costco and I'll get a big bag of jerky. I'll get a big bag of the little sausages and stuff, or beef sticks or something like that. And this is comfort food too. As far as I don't get stuff, I don't personally use like protein bars or Clif bars or anything like that. That's just not me. I'm more of a, I'll throw in, you know, a Snickers bar or something like something that I can sit down and enjoy eating. And it's not just to just fuel my body. It's still fun.
It's fueling your mentality, right?
Heck yeah, man. Yeah. Heck yeah. Cannot wait for lunchtime. You know, so I'll do that. And I mean, I'll throw in some Hershey Kisses or something like that. I mean, but then every day, so I pack these thing and are like a fruit roll up too, you know, something like that's really good to have in the middle of the day. So, and so I'll just make these little quart size Ziploc bags full of my lunches for every single day, or my, you know, I just pull it out when I want, you know, whatever out of it. Mm-hmm. And, and that's what I do for every day. So I'll have one of those for every day. And I'll usually have a breakfast meal. B&G breakfast skillet is another really, mm-hmm. really good one. Those are good. And then a dinner. So I've got two Mountain Houses and my little food pouch. Okay. And that's it.
So are you eating hot in the morning if you can?
If I can, oatmeal and everything, I can use so much of it, and then it gets old after a while. You just get sick of it every single day. I mean, like 2 years ago, I did 53 days straight of sleeping on the ground for 53 days straight.
Oh, no.
So, I mean, it's just after a while, it's just like, oh, man, I don't know if I even want anything, let alone another brown sugar oatmeal. You know what I mean? It's like, no, but yeah, as far as that goes, you can go as simple as you want. Put together your food bags and get a breakfast and a dinner, and your poundage on that is nothing. I mean, it's pretty, mm-hmm. pretty nil, really.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my kind of food system there, man. That's what I like. I like to eat, man. And I require more food than some people sometimes. I don't know why. I've always been a big eater. So yeah. You were talking about sleeping on the ground for 53 days straight. I have like middle back problems sometimes that bothers me. And so like a pad is something I'm very interested in. I'm interested in knowing like what you're sleeping on, I guess.
So I'm not even sure what I have right now. I'm one of the guys that just throws something down and just let it rip.
Gotcha.
Cody's more, and some of the other guys that we hunt with, they're more of the, I think he's running a Sea to Summit. And the big thing there that you'll look at on pads is it's called the R value, which mm-hmm. that's the insulation value in the pad. So you need to don't scrimp on that's another thing that you probably shouldn't scrimp on as far as cost wise is get a good pad that you're comfortable with, especially if you have back problems a little bit and, you know, some uncomfortability there. I think mine right now is an REI. It's just a run of the mill REI, $80 probably or so pad is what I have right now. Mm-hmm. And they go up from there, you know, obviously. But another big thing is a patch kit, you know. And anytime that you get something, we talked a little bit about like first aid stuff and everything a little bit earlier. You can universally use things for first aid, right? So you've ever heard of Leuco tape?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So yeah. So like that's what we'll do. We'll carry Leuco tape, and that can be used as you know, as far as compression or whatever that you need to wrap around anything. And so, and what we'll do is take a thing of Leuco tape instead of just throwing it in your pack, wrap it around your trekking pole because you're going to have that with you anyway. Wrap it around and make a pretty good little, you know, half inch or whatnot wrap around your trekking pole, and that way it's not digging through your pack. You've got it right on hand when you're hiking, when you're doing the heavy hikes, and if you got to take your boots off, you don't have to dig through your pack to use your, you know, to grab the Leuco tape if you have a hot spot or whatnot on your foot. So mm-hmm. it just things like that, just little things that you guys, you know, will learn, or you could, you know, learn from just watching somebody else do those things. It can really advance, you know, the the pleasure of the hunt, actually.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And that's, I mean, I've watched Land of the Free a couple times, a couple different episodes and stuff, and really enjoyed it. And that's one of the things I like is whenever y'all do take the time to kind of explain stuff as opposed to just, go find how to do this somewhere else, you know what I mean? And one of those things that y'all have talked about a couple times that was pretty enlightening is the way you do water. I've used a SteriPen and done it that way, and it works pretty good. I never really thought about the idea of having like dirty water in your pack and then purifying later. So can you explain a little bit how y'all do that?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And some of this stuff too, I mean, we are definitely, we're open books. We do not keep any secrets or nothing. There's no, you know, please don't tell anybody, you know, stuff. It's always. And sometimes we take it for granted because we've done it for quite a while. So yeah, water system. Water is most important thing out there by far, bar none. When I'm setting up a hunt, and I get a lot of questions about this as far as how do you guys know where you're going to go? And because we've never scouted a place before, like with boots on the ground. We've always just gone in and, you know, we've e-scouted it through Onyx, through, you know, all Google Maps, all this stuff. And, anyway, that's how we pick our spots where we're going to go. But yeah, water is huge. So you've got to have water. Same with elk. They've got to have water. It's just, they can travel a lot further than you can to go get it. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna definitely find these places with water, and we use what's called a Sawyer squeeze bag. It's about the most cheapest. When we first started, there was Katadyn. There's all these different filters out there. There's pump filters that you got to pump this handle, and we were blowing through seals on those like it was going out of style. It was horrible. Luckily, that REI had the. You know, guarantee thing where you could take them back and keep taking them back. But those were like $130 a piece.
Oh.
Yeah. So what we use now is just a Sawyer squeeze filter, and you can buy it anywhere, Walmart, anywhere you can buy it. And I recommend getting the large one. Don't get the mini. The mini just doesn't do enough volume. You need to get the large one, and there's not much weight. Too much weight in between the two. The difference, you know, in the weight. And yeah. And you just take a bag, you dip it in, we'll call it a dirty bag. So it's going to be your water that you're going to pull out of a creek or a lake or a pond or whatever. And you just fill it up, you screw it onto this filter, and you just squeeze the water through this little inline filter. It's really simple. And another thing that we've done is taking it to the next level and putting adapters on the end of that filter. So you don't have to take out your bladder bag in your pack. You can just do a quick disconnect right into your hose line that you're drinking through and fill up your bladder from the outside of your bag. And it works really, really slick. We've got a few different videos on it, but I save just a little bit of time of taking your bladder out and doing all that, you know, and so you can just bust off your pack, grab your filter. I always have my filter right. I mean, it's the quickest thing that I can get to. And, or my dirty bag. So like you mentioned, we'll fill up dirty bags and say we're on a bull or something and we're crossing a creek and we're not sure where we're going to end up that night. And we got a bull bugle going out in front of us. We'll just bust out our dirty bags, fill two of them up, get 2 liters and throw them right in your pack and put your pack back on and go.
Yeah.
You can filter that water anytime. You don't have to take the time to do it. You can wait till you're, you know, hopefully, you know, gutting out an elk or something.
So,
I mean, it's a pretty streamlined, really slick way to do it and to keep water. Water is very important. Don't ever pass it up. That's a big thing. If you're out of water, that's, I think, a big, big thing that people, get into and kind of misconception of backpacking is, oh, I'll get it later. And pretty soon you're not around it at all. And it's getting dark. You don't have water to cook up your meal. You're cramping up or what, you know, you overdid it that day or whatever the case may be. Definitely don't pass up water. It's just like, you know, don't leave fish to find fish, right?
Yeah, sure. So what's the dirtiest water that you've used, with one of those Sawyer filters?
There's a lot of, we get a lot of videos of pumping, you know, pulling water right out of elk poop and in mud puddles. Yeah. My best one was I was on the top of this mountain and spending the night, and there was this old broke down on the side of the road water tanker. It was a water truck and it had been there for I don't know how long. Well, we got in on this water truck and there was no water anywhere else, and opened up the lid on this tanker and we hoisted Steve down in there by his legs and he was dipping water out on his head in this water tanker. So I've taken it out of a lot of different things, and honestly, we never have had to deal with no one's got sick or anything. So those filters seem to work pretty well.
Cool.
That's cool, man. And it's funny. Of course, it sometimes doesn't pay to be the smallest guy in the group, does it?
No, that is a fact. But I've used the tablets. I was around Dirk, a good friend of mine, Dirk Durham. For the last few years I've hunted with him, and he uses the SteriPen thing. So he'll fill up his Nalgene bottle and then he'll just wave that pin like you were talking about in there. He never got, you know, obviously never got sick and everything. So that seems to work too. There's so many different ways of doing it. But as far as being light and simple and being able to tap into your bladder and do all that, that's the best way that we've found. And it's super reasonable. I mean, they're under $30. They're really, it's a price you've got to pay in order not to get sick.
Yeah, that's nice. What's a reasonable amount of water to, like, make sure you always have on you? Because, like, for me, honestly, I drink a ton of water. You know, we're from Texas. It gets real hot, so I get used to drinking a gallon and a half a day in the summertime when I'm working.
Oh.
You know, so, yeah, it's for real. But, you know, honestly, when I go to the mountains, it's kind of like a – it's always going to be a dehydration because you just can't drink that much water and hunt effectively, you know, you end up having to stop and use the bathroom all the time and stuff too, you know? So,
Sure. Well,
like, how much are y'all trying to have on you, you know, like say you're heading in for the night and you're going to try to have water for the next 12 hours or whatever, like what's a reasonable amount to have in the pack all the time?
Yeah. So I'm a little bit different. I don't drink as much water as I probably should. So, and then you've got all different elements. Cody, he drinks tons quite a bit and he's always got water on him. So just always make sure you're planning for the long run is what I would say. And what I mean by that is, so, okay, if we get on a bull and we start chasing him and it gets dark on us and we're standing right there and we don't have water, you need that much, you know? So yeah. I need a leader to cook my food and to be comfortable as far as with for water tonight. And then I also need some for that trip that I, you know, maybe chasing that bull. So usually everybody, you know, I've had as much as, you know, a gallon and a half when we couldn't find water. This last bear hunt, I took that much in with me, but usually it's only about 2 liters is what I try to keep on me at pretty much, you know, whenever I come by it or something. 2 liters is you can get by for that evening and then also for the next morning for a meal and be comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And then the reason I ask is just, okay, so I was watching Land of the Free 2.0 here all back, and you mentioned Brady Miller earlier, right? And it was really funny. I mean, you do a lot of funny things, so, you know, you probably know that. Like, we like to laugh. But it's pretty funny, the whole toothbrush thing, you know, with the...
Oh, man.
And he's got, like, this little baby... first of all, he's a giant man, right? Like, how tall is Brady? He's big. I don't know.
But, it's like 6'5".
Yeah,
like
6'5", 180, right? Beanpole dude.
Yeah, he's skinny.
Yeah,
dude.
Yeah, but he's got this little baby toothbrush in the smallest little bitty tube of toothpaste ever, and you just have like your normal one that you just took from home, right? Like it's pretty standard. And Brady makes the point that ounces make pounds and pounds is pain. And you were talking about earlier with food, it's the same thing. He had kind of had that aspect on. But I don't know, just for most people, that's not very relatable because honestly, like, the comforts matter a little bit more than just the ounces, right? So, I don't know. Do you really feel like you pay that much attention to, like, ounces and weight in your pack? Or do you just kind of go practically at it and say, what do I need to survive? And I'll just tough it out, and that's what we'll use.
It's exactly my motto right there.
Yeah.
So I just tough it out and just be like, yeah. You know, I mean, there's certain things that you can really scrimp down on. But that was the thing that got me with Brady, you know, is he was kind of, he comes from a mule deer hunting past. And so he would, I mean, he would have a tiny little toothbrush or cut off his handle and everything. And a lot of people do that and have this tiny little toothpaste. I mean, and he wouldn't bring a stove. He wouldn't bring anything like that. But on the other end of the spectrum, he'd bring two pairs of binoculars and a spotting scope hunting bugling elk. Ooh. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, what are you doing, man? I mean, I take out my binoculars and anyway, and you know, I don't even have binoculars usually in my case in my on my front pack. Yeah. You know, and he's just like, what? You know, I'm like, I'm going to shoot this thing at hopefully, you know, under 80 yards or what, you know, under 60 is what I'm hoping, you know, but I mean, that's like, you don't need binoculars for that kind of stuff, or let alone a spotting scope and an extra pair of them. So yeah. It was interesting, you know, just seeing the differences of what he wants for comfortability versus what my comfortability was. It was totally different, but yeah, the whole ounces lead to pounds, pound leads to pain, da da da. I mean, Brady, he'll go in for mule deer like 13 miles and he'll stay on one rock. Sometimes he'll sit on one rock looking for one buck that he's looking for 7 to 9 days straight without moving.
Yeah. Mm-mm. That is tough, man.
I'm out.
Yeah. Me too. Yeah, me too.
For sure. And you know, we're whitetail guys. So like we understand sitting a little bit, but man, we get to, get to do a little bit of moving around, you know, or whatever, change it up a little bit. But I don't know, I guess it's kind of more, it's a give and take, you know, whatever makes you comfortably mentally is going to help you in your hunt. Right. And for Brady, maybe, not carrying a stove or a full size, adult toothbrush, you know, maybe,
that's what
gets him there mentally to where he thinks he's prepared. And then mentally having the spotter and the extra binos, it makes him feel good about it and feel like he's going to have success in the hunt. And I don't know, just mentally preparing for success is something that, I think that I've done poorly of in the past. You know, I physically try to prepare for success, but like sometimes when it comes down to the moment, you know, you're being mentally prepared is pretty important for that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would totally agree. And I mentioned that before, it's all mental. It you know, it's overused obviously, but it really is. If you think you can do it, I mean, I'm taking guys out there that I'm like, this guy is not going to make it one day. And he just blasted right through it and just be like, well, I guess we got to go over there. I guess, you know, I mean, it is. It's just what you tell yourself. Your body can handle a ton. And it's just if you tell yourself that it can do it. And, you know, in a lot of instances, you can do it.
Yeah, for sure. So I loved your tip about the Leuco tape on the trekking pole. I think stuff like that is just so handy, and it's stuff that kind of only can come from experience, really. So is there one or two like top tips that you could just give us that you would say just make living in the backcountry better?
Top tips. In the evening, there's a lot of guys that, we always have like a kill bottle on us or something like that. So whether it's your favorite drink, whether it's, anything, you know, a thing of whiskey, just a shot of whiskey or something. A lot of people pack that kind of stuff with them. And it's just their evening nightcap or whatever they do. They have their little traditions. Another thing is really cool is like, and it doesn't weigh anything, like apple cider, you know, the little cider packets, cider.
Yep.
Heat up some water and put a little cider, you know, packet in there. And it's just the comforts, you know, just the fun parts. It's definitely can change the, your whole mentality of the hunt. Man, as far as like little tips and tricks and stuff, maybe I'll think of some as we kind of go along this thing and through this. But if anything I can think of, I'll definitely sometimes you just take things for granted. I should probably start writing stuff down, I guess.
No, it's one of those things that like during the hunt, it just comes natural when that particular instance arises, you know, and you're like, oh yeah, I've done this a million times, but like right now it's not something you are in that instance or that situation, you don't really remember. So I totally understand. But the apple cider thing is good because, for me, like, I like flavored drinks, but I try to stay away from like stuff that's bad for me. So I end up like a lot of times doing stuff like adding some of that like Powerade squeeze stuff to my water during the day and that kind of thing. Just to like, or just even a lot of times I'll take like apple juice and put it half and half with water, you know, just so I have a little flavor there, you know. So that's a great tip, man. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I've gone on the kombucha kick lately. I don't know if you got that thing going.
I love it.
But I don't know how I'm going to get the kombucha to the backcountry, man, because I've been drinking like a bottle a day, so it's going to be kind of tough. But I might just take a SCOBY to the backcountry and just make my own back there. I don't know.
That would be, I don't know if it would be pounds effective, but yeah, I would do it. That would be an awesome episode.
Yeah.
That is one thing too, that it sounds really, really simple, but a lot of guys don't use bladders or something, you know, a lot of guys, and I've done it myself, actually just a water bottle. So you will, that the whole thing behind a water bladder is if you have water accessible, you're going to drink it more. You know, if you just have to go through your pack or reach, you know, have someone grab it out of your pack or whatnot, you're not going to drink as much water. So accessibility to something like that is definitely beneficial, you know, for muscle strain and everything, you know, keep hydrated. So yeah, if you have it and you have it on your person more, you're definitely going to use it more. So yeah, that's another thing I would definitely say.
Good tip. Cool. So do you run an Nalgene too, or do you just use your bladder? That way you always have the hose right there.
I use my bladder, or I just grab, like, you know, usually on the way to the hunt, I'll grab a smart water, you know, just out of the store. Mm-hmm. And then I'll just put that bottle in my back. And that way I have a bottle that I can measure stuff out of, and then I can put things in that is separate from like my jet boil or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing we all use, as far as the stoves that we take are jet boils. We don't use the MSRs. Pocket rockets or whatever. What we found the most effective is the jet boil, and we've tested everything as far as weight retention, as far as the quickest way to boil water has been a jet boil stove. And you're going to pack a little bit more, a couple more ounces maybe, as far as weight wise, but you'll save it in fuel because it does way more efficient and it boils water faster. So we've tested all that stuff and jet boil seems to come up on top pretty much every time.
Yeah. Well, Tyler and I have kind of been jumping back and forth on that thing. We both have pocket rockets and use them a lot whitetail hunting, you know, but we actually had that discussion the other night of like, are you going to save more weight with the pocket rocket and a little bit more fuel versus, you know, the jet boil and the less fuel? And I guess you just gave us the answer, and that's why we got you on the podcast, right? Because, I don't know, we just don't have that much time for testing. And speaking of that, to jump back to something that you talked about earlier, I wanted to ask you. So bow shops are pretty much readily available across the U.S., I don't know anywhere around here to actually get measured for a pack. Where do you go and do that at? Do we have to fly to like Bozeman where there's a REI and do that, or like what do you do?
Just honestly, and this is where we could touch on a whole different aspect of, and I'm sure you guys have a lot of people around there that, and I don't know, I guess in the whitetail woods, I'm not sure, but you know, a lot of us have, you know, growing up and everything, we've always had that guy that kind of mentored us, whether it be our dad, whether it be, you know, someone of that nature. And I'm just talking hunting alone, that kind of taught us the, okay, you know, you do this, you check the wind, you do, you know, taught us the ways of doing that. And I would say there's got to be someone around there that's just that geared nut, you know, that really knows it really, really well. And whether it be an archery shoots or whatever, find that guy and just say, hey, does this pack fit me right? Does this work? You know, and there's always someone around that knows a lot about certain things and gear junkies around. And so that's what I've got the, you know, I have Steve Speck, the guy that makes the packs, you know, he'll like just fit me for it and say, okay, we need to raise the belt just a little bit. That's way too low on your hips, or you know what I mean? And get a versatile pack, get something that actually you can change around. Like our packs, you can change the, how high the belt is and how, I mean, everything about our packs are super versatile to where you can get it fitting just right for you. And that's what I would recommend, is just go to someone that knows a lot. And it's not just like throwing a pack on and be like, oh, this is okay. You know, just make sure it fits you good and it's comfortable. and you go through it that way. And you can go as far as little as you want. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so. Sure. Man, that's a great point. And it's something I didn't even think about. Like, I always am trying to just find a retailer and look at stuff and think about stuff. But, man, the community aspect is so much more useful. And there's a bunch of people that do this stuff. And, like, I mean, that's why we got you on the show, man, because stuff we want to do, stuff that you do and do effectively, and you're going to have these great ideas and stuff that you've tried yourself or that you've learned from other people. And I just think that, in general, that idea of the hunting community is a big thing. And now, when we're more connected than ever, we should be utilizing that as opposed to just isolating ourselves, you know?
Yeah, no, totally, man. And that's what's so cool about the now and these days. I mean, you could say, oh, yeah, everybody, you know, you have so much, you know, and you have so much information out there, and there is, man, anybody. And that's what the big thing. That's why I love to hear you guys are coming out west, and you've done it before. And I skimmed through a lot of your guys' YouTube stuff and looking through some stuff. It's really good stuff.
Thanks, man.
But just getting the, it's all in your head, right? There's so many people. I get tons and tons of emails of, man, I'd like to come out west, but it's scary. You know, it is. And to me, you know, when I first look at that question, I'm just like, oh, no, just, you know, come out here. But, man, if I'm from, you know, Pennsylvania or, you know, South Carolina or something like that, to think about going clear out west to 10,000 feet and bailing over the side of some mountain down in the bottom of somewhere and, you know, finding my own water and find, you know, it, I thought, man, that's scary as hell. That's honestly scary.
Yeah.
And it's stuff that we kind of maybe take for granted at times, but it's like, wow, that is a definite concern. And, but with all the knowledge and everything now with the YouTube, with Onyx Maps, with Go Hunt to tell you where to go to research units and bull to cow ratios and to try to have a great hunt and your draw odds. Can I really plan to take the work off, you know, to go on this hunt? And what do I need to do to prepare myself for that? There is so many things. There's so many outlets out there now that a guy can actually delve into it, actually come out here and feel pretty confident, I think, before he even steps foot on the ground. So, I mean, there's so many resources, and it's great what you guys are doing, actually, as far as just kind of making those come to the surface and talk about it.
You know? Yeah, well, thanks, man. I appreciate that, dude. We try. You know, what I tell people a lot of times, actually, this happened this week. A guy, we were talking on social media, and he's like, I'm looking forward to learning some stuff from y'all's YouTube channel. I'm like, well, you're going to learn from our mistakes is what you're going to learn from, man, because we don't do things right a lot of times, but maybe we'll help you by not making some mistakes. But if people want to learn more about y'all, learn how to, like, have fun while they're out there doing the stuff, because y'all are good at that, man, where can they find more about Born and Raised Outdoors?
Yeah, just Born and Raised Outdoors on YouTube. We have a bunch of videos, and we've done quite a few seasons of elk. Elk is kind of our forte, but we also we've done a lot of fishing in the past as well, and all sorts of stuff. Just having fun, and I'm wanting to get more into you know, taking kids out. My son, I've taken him out quite a bit, shot some blacktail deer and cool. Stuff like that. But yeah, the kids, the next generation's big. It's huge, man. And so we need to get them kids out and doing things. But yeah, just bornandraisedoutdoors.com is our website. I mean, anything that in that kind of elk hunting, deer hunting, whatever, we pretty much offer it. And like I said, there's any questions for me that anybody has or anything, it's info@bornandraisedoutdoors.com. And I try to go through all the questions and I try to answer them. And it's a lot of, hey, I want to come out west. What do I need for this? And so this is great, man. This is really good.
Awesome, cool. Brother. We'll appreciate it, man. Is Land of the Free 3.0 looking pretty good so far?
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to call it that.
Okay.
But yeah, it's shaping up. We're kind of a fly by the seat of our pants kind of a crew.
I like it, dude. That is how I like to roll.
Oh, man. Yeah, we're still planning. We're still – everything's kind of just all over the map a little bit. And so anyway, but in the end, it usually – you know, if you come together as brothers, it usually comes all together. So
that's right, man. That's right. Well, it's all about getting out there, having fun together, enjoying God's creation, and just seeing beautiful beautiful country.
Absolutely.
Dude. So Trent, I can't thank you enough for hopping on the show and just sharing your wealth of knowledge with us, dude. You're a humble guy and I really appreciate that, but man, do you know a lot about how to do this stuff. So we really appreciate it, dude.
man, I am worse than you guys. I learned from a lot of mistakes.
Cool, dude. Well, thank you so much, dude. We'll be talking to you soon.
Absolutely. Let's do it again sometime.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Trent.
Man, that was some killer info. If you found this interview helpful, be sure and leave us a review below and comment what you thought was the most helpful tip from this episode.
For sure. Make sure you also follow us on our social media platforms, Facebook and Instagram, and also subscribe on YouTube so you can see how these hunts turn out.
Remember, this is your element.
Live in it. Been waiting my whole life for that.